Hey everybody, welcome to our final episode of our Dantastic Month as we visit with the Stupids. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why do you sound so pained when you say the Stupids? Well, it's bad. It's really bad. But we are entering the kind of crisp month of October, and we gave Dan one last chance to redeem himself. And oof, he said he wanted to do a movie that was notorious, and I understand why. Of course, Matt liked it, but you know how that goes. And I think Nor did too. I'm starting to question members of my show. Anyway, thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for rating, responding, reviewing, and, you know, giving us feedback. Just in general, reach out to us on Twitter or X or whatever nonsense. Or join the Facebook group. It's fairly active and we share movie stuff. Nothing big, nothing heavy, nothing political, just movie stuff. Sometimes that's all you need after a long day. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome to Myopia Movies, and I'm fixing to make a bad decision. Welcome to another episode of a Dantastic podcast. Mr. Sudsy, why don't you take us away?
Well, I fail to see how this is a quote-unquote bad decision, except with regards to the movie that we're watching today. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we are talking about the time when Tom Arnold had a viable career. It's John Landis's, yes, comedy legend John Landis's The Stupid. I am Daniel, serving in as the MC for this Dantastic month, and on panel we have Nick.
I am Nick Rifron Siniprov, and panelist on Myopia Movies and Required Reading.
And we've got Nor.
Nor Trinette, a constant contributor to Myopia Movies, and also Stupid.
And Matt.
Yep, Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn, check out my Substack.
Now, Substack just sounds like a very dirty thing in a fetish club. Can you tell me a little more about what that is?
It's a newsletter.
Okay, there we go.
I felt really on the spot for my own. I apologize if that was stupid, but it goes in theme with the rest of what we're doing with the movie's called. Sorry.
Sounded fine to me.
Well, I'm going to toss this out here. This movie is terrible. But also,
yeah, it is.
Also, like, it's just funny how you've the movies you've chosen have been of an interesting value, Dan. And we've already so far done Reanimator, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and Armed of Dangerous. Now, this is interestingly paired against Armed of Dangerous, because Armed of Dangerous is also written by a 80s comedy like superstar. Right? It's a Harold Ramis picture. This is a John Landis picture, right? And that one has John Candy in it. And this one has, I mean, I want to say he's lesser Tom Arnold, but he at the time was still quote unquote Tom Arnold, like big guy. It's just funny how, like, in my heart of hearts, I'm warmed by the fact that John Landis, Harold Ramis, John Candy, they never once made a bad movie. And here you are, kicking into my sandcastles. like Armed and Dangerous, I enjoyed more than this one, but holy crap. It's bad when the best bit you have in your movie is purchased from someone else. Because they sing the song, I'm Your Own Grandpa, which I first saw in The Muppets, but, you know, strange.
In The Muppets.
One of the Muppets performed it on The Muppet Show. I'm My Own Grandpa. It's just a song. I don't know where it came out of. I imagine it's a vaudeville from the 1920s.
It's something
and 30s.
From the 40s initially. The reason I picked this movie was because I remember it when it was around. Like, I know my aunt had the books. This is based on a kiddie book series that she'd read to us. And when this started coming out, I was aware of what the Stupids were. It's, I mean, even the books were pretty much lobotomized Addams Family, but I could see why they wanted to turn that into a movie. And I wanted to see it, but the reviews were so bad. Mom and Dad refused. So here I am now in 2023 actually watching it. And they were right. This is just embarrassing for all involved.
So you said this was derived from a comic or a strip, or what do you mean?
Like a series of like picture books.
Like Archie or Garfield.
No. Like Nora. No. A kid's book, like a board book, like a book you'd read to like your nephew, like a little kid book.
Like Green Eggs and Dr. Seuss.
That kind of shit. Now, were you ever aware of the World's Worst Maid, Amelia Bedelia?
I was not.
So she was someone who took everything literally. So if you asked her to say dust to the drapes, she would add dust to the drapes, right? That's who she was, which is how she accidentally killed the family of five and ended up in prison for the rest of her life at Arkham Asylum. But like, that's what this
for my money. For my money, it's one of the most honest portrayals of someone on the autistic spectrum ever in any media.
Yes, 100%. Totally 100%.
The stupid or the maid.
Amelia Bedelia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she's also like, how do I put it? She's good-hearted. Like, and I'm not saying that the stupids aren't, but the stupids are intentionally dumb. And I have never almost turned off a movie and pretended to be sick faster than this movie.
Could probably function socially if people explained things to her. The stupids, I'm not sure how they're still alive.
Now, I just want to put a pin in this real quick. Nick, when we get to the point where you wanted to turn off the movie, please chime in. Don't say it now, but as we, you know, we go through the breakdown of it, I just want to see where, because I want to see if it lines up with me or it lines up with anyone who watches this movie.
Well, the opening credits happened and I got a tremor. But like, I mean, we can start this movie. Well, actually, no, Sudsy, it's your show. You tell me what to do.
Give us the breakdown.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and give it plot synopsis, and then we can actually get into scene by scene in this movie. First and foremost, the movie came out in 1996, I believe. If anyone wants to correct me, no, it was 1996 according to IMDb, which is the same year that the Beavis and Butthead movie came out. And it's pretty much the same plot. A group of idiots get somehow pulled.
My joke was going to be, it was the same year as the Olympic Park bombing and it had the same effect on America, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, it was just kind of a wet fart that eventually people just forgot about. Unless they were eyewitnesses, in which case you don't forget this.
Right. Hashtag never forget the stupids.
But Stanley Stupid is a stupid man who is convinced that there's conspiracy out there to steal his garbage. Like, his wife will accidentally leave the cans out and he out in the driveway, and then the next morning the garbage is gone. So someone's stealing their trash. And in trying to solve this mystery, Stanley gets pulled into this web of espionage with a traitorous army officer selling weapons to a bunch of foreign nations, and his family, who are all equally dumb, are trying to solve the mystery behind what their husband is doing. That's the best I can do. I mean, this, after a while, this movie forgets what the plot is. But I want to go ahead and go around the room before we begin. Matt, had you seen this movie before?
No, I remember seeing the TV commercials, like showing Tom Arnold, you know, someone's stealing our garbage, and thinking they were hilarious. But this, what year did this movie come out?
96. Okay, like, so I said, same year as the Beavis and Butthead movie.
So I've been in fifth or sixth grade, so there's no accounting for taste.
Oh, of course not. Not at that age. And strangely enough, I remember they tried to make this a thing. Like, there were, when I would be at like after school daycare in elementary school, there'd be like just a bunch of random books they had in this like basket that was falling apart. It was like one of those wicker baskets someone left out in the rain. And they would just have a bunch of random stuff in there. There was Where's Waldo in there, and the Stupids movie official children's book tie-in was in there. So they were trying.
When watching the movie, I can definitely tell it wasn't a cheap movie to make. I can see where the money went into. Don't get me wrong. For 96, like what besides like the big action movies of the 80s, what big action movies of the 90s were there? Rambo and things. So because like I will say this, as stupid as this movie is, there's some pretty expensive, hilarious action sequences that goes around. They're similar to like Hot Shots Part Dos with Charlie Sheen.
Part
deux.
To answer your question, the 90s action movies were just kind of all over the place. I mean, people were still trying to make action movies either by extending 80s franchises. So like there were two Lethal Weapon movies in the 90s and a Die Hard movie that came out. Arnold Schwarzenegger was still a thing. He actually had a movie released the same year as this. It's called Eraser.
Oh, okay.
Which I also remember seeing the trailer for back in the day, but I don't know if I ever actually saw the movie. And Michael Bay was starting to become a thing. So Bad Boys came out in 95, and then Armageddon came out in, I think, 98.
Okay, now I'm imagining Michael Bay doing the Stupids, maybe more explosions at the end.
Oh, there is a director I think could have actually done well with this material, but we'll get into that later. And John Landis actually had directed a Beverly Hills Cop movie before this, but it was the third one, which nobody liked.
So the and, two things. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Nor.
Well, no, I was just saying, like, before we start bashing this movie, there are two things that I want to point out, and something that my girlfriend Savannah she said as well, because like I said, hey, I have to watch a movie for a podcast. She said, what's it called? And I was like, it's called The Stupids. And she was like, ugh. And she's like, do you guys do any good movies? And I'm like, listen, we do these so you don't have to watch them. Anyways, but she did point out first that the music was good at the beginning. The intro music was good. And even I was getting like Back to the Future vibes kind of music too, you know, as well, just with the like, but also.
It did. Totally.
Yeah, and I also want to point out, like, I saw where this movie went. Oh, it kind of, at one point it kind of reminded me of like Airplane. You know what I mean? Like, and we mentioned Hot Shots, Patch Deux, but like those are the two things that I wanted to say. Like, what it was trying to do was I can see, but also the music was really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom Arnold did a fine job. Otherwise, no one else did. I think it was just a mess. I don't
Tom
know
Arnold was the Tom Arnold was the only guy who was into it.
Yeah. I don't know if it was his passion project or what, but it was just he was trying. There's not a lot there to try with, but he was trying.
He had out Bug Hall. Was that his name? Bug Hall?
The kid, the boy. The costumes are terrible. It just, at least on Tom Arnold, looks right. I don't know. It's such a mess. This movie is such a mess. All right. I mean, from the beginning. Okay. So they wake up, get out of bed.
Drag a comb across their head.
Yeah. He's wearing his hat to bed, right? He's like, he gets dressed and goes out to the day, and he's pissed off that someone's, well, he's trying to do a to-do list, and his to-do list is literally make a list of items, check off items, cross out items, complete items. And I'm just like, oh my god, that I literally thought about pausing the movie and just calling in sick.
That wouldn't have been wrong, and that's actually one of the more inspired gags.
It is.
That was a pause moment.
By the way, how did they miss the opportunity to play the Weird Al song "Dare to Be Stupid"? It was in the Transformers movie, and this movie is literally called "The Stupids."
Now,
You could have literally played Dare to be Stupid in a movie called The Stupids, and it would have had Weird Al in a movie about stupid people. That's a comedy. Weird Al should be in more movies.
Yeah, that, yes, that should be. That'd be amusing.
Agreed.
And if you have not listened to it, there's or seen it on Netflix, you can. I think it's on Netflix right now. There's a good movie based on the kids' books by Dav Pickney called Captain Underpants, and the movie is hilarious. It's got it's called Captain Underpants.
Yeah,
and it's a series of books where these two kids,
the kid with alopecia in his underwear.
That's right. These essentially the comics are based on this guy. They are kids who are good kids, but they get in trouble a lot. They play pranks, and they make a cartoon hero called Captain Underpants, and then they accidentally hypnotize their principal into thinking he's Captain Underpants, and they fight a science teacher named Professor Poopy Pants. But it has the right thinking idea to get Weird Al to do the theme song. And guess what? Yeah. It's a banger, because it's Weird Al fucking Yankovic, guys. He already has a song called
Dare to be Stupid.
Nah, man. Are you ready for impending doom? That's another thing, like you said, based on a kids' series. And the kids' series here, like one of the gags is all the stupids sleep in the same bed, but they put their feet on the pillow instead of their heads.
Which is an opening gag here.
Yeah. And, I mean, that checklist is one of the more inspired gags. And I'm... was going to say this for later, but I just want to go ahead and bring it up now, because I think I'm absolutely correct here. There is one way this material could have worked, and that's if John Waters had directed it.
Who's John Waters?
John Waters is a director who does intentionally challenging things. Let's put it that way. He's very funny, but he's also just over the top, like making his femme fatale character famous drag queen, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Was that the one with Patrick Swayze and Wesley Snipes?
No.
No, but he could have done that movie.
Have you ever seen Hairspray, the musical?
Which
the one with, the John, one with John Travolta?
Yeah,
yeah.
The one with John Travolta, yeah.
That's based on one of his movies. Hairspray is.
So he wrote
and
that. He wrote the original movie that was
the original movie. Ricky Lake was in it, but also, are you a big Simpsons fan, Nor?
Influence and pop culture reference, but not as deep as you and Nick.
Do you remember the one where Homer thinks Bart's going to be gay?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Is that episode, Mill episode
5?
Yes, that is the Steel Mill episode for Matt. John Waters. The whole thing is about the Simpsons meeting this like junk store owner in the mall, and John Waters is the store owner.
Okay.
John Waters takes essentially a 1950s traditional American vibe, and then, you know, using the word properly, makes it queer. Like, he shows that the underneath is not as crystal clean and, you know, girl in poodle skirts, men in gray flannel suits as it actually is. You know, everyone has an interesting, not necessarily violent, this is an American Psycho, but they have something about them that makes them quirky, and then it's pushed to its logical extremes. He's an important satiric director in American film literature.
Okay, I could go on for hours, trying to find similarities or even similar pictures that have maybe of influences, but we have to fucking talk about Alfalfa and Tom Arnold.
You're right. Alfalfa. The reason I say that is because I think the aesthetic here is what John Waters is trying to go for. Just really weird 1950s conservative junk culture America.
Or if I may, it's everyone who's not the hero in a Tim Burton movie.
Yes. I was thinking Pee Wee Herman. This reminds me a lot of Pee Wee Herman if he was 40 and had a family.
Well, but even the first Tim Burton or Pee Wee Herman movie is a Tim Burton movie, right? Like, because that's what it is. It's that, you know, the people in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, the people in Edward Scissorhands, the people in Ed Wood who aren't the main characters. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they live in this normal world. They're the Superintendent Chalmers for The Simpsons, right? Like, it's such a plain Jane regular world, and these people from another galaxy have shown up, and Stanley Stupid is convinced people are stealing their garbage, which, again, considering that the man is in his early 40s, is something he should have figured out 40 years ago. But luckily, this is America, so he's found someone dumb enough to fall in love with him. Right? Like, I don't know. Like, the other thing, like, unless they're first cousins, the fact that she exists is a miracle.
Is.
No, yeah. Maybe they are first cousins. That might explain the situation with the kids.
That's, yep.
Well, let's go ahead and move on with what's going on. Stanley, Tom Arnold, is waiting for the guys who are stealing the trash to come back to the scene of the crime, which means, of course, garbage men show up. And at this point, I have my notes that I was already bored at the point.
I will say, though, he's right, because this is a directing problem, but they drive down the street, presumably the next day, right? And no garbage people show up day after day after day, right? Like, that's weird. But they only stop at his house.
You're right.
Something's funny, because I watched that scene, I'm just like, you know, if this was a movie, you know, a movie, like, people make a movie, they would be just stopping at every house. But it would have been funnier, if he's literally standing behind that thing and watching them for 7 straight days. He literally has to wait a week, and the sun rises and sets and rises and sets for a whole week before they show up a second time. And then it's the normal shift. Also, these guys need a union, because apparently they work from the middle of the night until, like, the late afternoon the next day. Like, holy shit.
On both fronts, that's commitment.
Oh, God, help me.
Well, Stanley goes rollerblading after the garbage men, because rollerblades have 8 wheels, which is better than a bicycle and a car. Because 2 and 4 wheels. And then the kids wake up. And the alfalfa one, Norris Wright, the kid playing the son here, was Alfalfa in the Little Rascals remake. And his name is Bug Hill.
And with a very marketable name, Bug Hill. Ant Hill was already taken by, I guess, a garbage pail child. So they gave him the name Bug Hill on a bet. And
his name is Buster.
Yeah, the character's name is Buster. The slightly more human name of Buster. You know, if you told me this was a secret Coneheads movie or something, I'd believe you, because it's that dumb. But, okay, so Bug Hill, who is playing opposite his sister, who...
Just going back to what you said about the Coneheads reference, there was a sequence in this movie that was very reminiscent, to me at least, to those National Lampoon movies, specifically like Blues Brothers, not the first one, the second one, where this, like, the car crashes and things like that. And again, the references that I was mentioning to you, it was giving me those type of vibes. Even those Blues Brothers came out, what, the 80s? If I'm not mistaken, 1980s, but here is a movie in the 90s still trying to reference that, hone in that type of sense of humor. So, just,
and that's a weird thing about this movie. It was directed by John Landis, who knows what he's doing.
Right.
He directed at least 2 all-time comedy classics, probably more than that. I mean, besides Blues Brothers and Animal House, he did he's the guy who did Coming to America. He did Trading Places.
Yep.
I mean,
didn't he do Stripes? He's done
some great stuff. I don't think he did Stripes, but Nick, he did do the Kentucky Fried Movie, which I know is one of your favorites.
It's one of the, if you have not seen it, it's one of the funniest sketch movies you've ever seen. They are incredibly uneven, very unbalanced. In that, like, one is like 30 minutes and some are 30 seconds, but You see some true genius in those clips, you know.
He directed Thriller?
Yes, he did.
What the fuck?
Well, I mean, I was going to pose this question just in general, but like, my great fear as someone who's tall and white is, what if I stop being funny? Does that mean that they'll come after me? And like, it just, it's so funny because like, in some ways, this is the question. Did he become unfunny? Because like, to me, again, we said this, Tom Arnold is Tom Arnold. He's fine. I think he does what best he can with this. And he, like you said, Daniel, he buys into this premise. And if you have not seen this season of FUBAR, do, because he's the torturer. And he comes out and he's just like, oh, hi, my name is Tom Arnold and I'm here to just torture the hell out of you. And he beats a man nearly to death for digging his car with a shopping cart. It's funny as shit. I think the man is funny. It's frustrating here that someone who I think is truly directed some very funny movies, some of my favorite movies, could have it so wrong. It's remarkable. Then we go to the dump for an hour and a half. Like,
well, I could see he wanted to make another Three Amigos. Looking at his resume right now, I don't know. Maybe he was reaching. Maybe he was gassed at this point. Maybe he needed
cocaine money.
Maybe he needed cocaine money. Speaking of cocaine, Tom Arnold does a lot of cocaine. And I think it's very, even you can tell how he is right now. No offense to what he was. He's actually done a 180 in his life. It only took separating from Roseanne. Oh, that was a thing.
That was a thing.
Don't worry. She is such a alt-right bitch on social media. They killed her off in Roseanne. And so Roseanne now exists without her. They killed off her character she OD'd on painkillers, I think, like Rush Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. It's really, those were strong choices that they made. And don't worry, you know, Tom Arnold, still lovable. So
the weird thing is that while his ex-wife turned into that, he was the guy going, yeah, I've got Celebrity Apprentice tapes where Trump uses the N-word. I'm going to release him. Although we're still waiting, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Tom is the guy who, he stinks of wanting to still be a celebrity, but doesn't know what to do, which is a shame because I still think he's kind of funny.
So where was he at in his career in the early 90s?
Now, I mean, in the 90s, he was right off the cusp of his wave. Like, because he had done comedy throughout the 80s. And in the 80s, just for those of you who are younger than us, like Noor, it used to be very hard for people to transition from TV to movies, right? I mean, like, and so for him, this is not a bit part, so to speak. This is a chance for him to lead a movie, right?
What TV show?
I mean, he was in a bunch of shit. But it was always kind of bit parts because in general, Roseanne was the bigger draw and her sitcom hit. So for him, he was just trying to find a place to be. Like, for example, there's a Freddy Krueger movie, and Sudge, you might have to help me here. Is it number 3? No, 4. I think it's 4. Where all the kids are dead because they've stopped having kids in the town because when they have kids, Freddy Krueger comes to town.
Oh.
And a bunch of kids come to visit and they stop in a diner and Tom Arnold is the guy working the grill and Roseanne is the waitress. And like, that's kind of what it was like for him in the late 80s, early 90s. But then when comedic actors started becoming big because of people like Jim Carrey, they started like, well, we got these other people we could also throw out there. And so TV stars for the first time in the late 90s started to become movie stars. And
like Tim Allen.
Kind of.
Tim Allen was like, this was the same year, I think, as the Santa Claus, right?
Yeah, Santa Claus was 2 years beforehand, and Tom Arnold might have been sitcom adjacent, but Tim Allen was legitimately headlining one of the most popular TV shows of the 90s. So,
yeah.
Will Smith.
Will Smith. Yeah, Will exactly. Smith. And that's just what you got to be thinking. Like, they were looking for people. And
Will Smith.
That's what well, but we were trying to manufacture big comedies. And the problem right. is, the big comedies that we think of from the 70s and 80s happened to almost be random successes. These were people who were like National Lampoon, where we're like, yes, they're Harvard guys. I'm not going to say they came from nowhere. But like, these were ideas. Like, John Hughes was writing things, and he was just a guy. Like, and these things started to hit. So what do? You get Harold Ramis. You get Max Landis. John Landis. And you get these people who are like, well, we know funny. And then you cast it with people like, question mark. I mean, Kelsey Grammer was in a comedy called Deep Down Periscope. Like, Tom Arnold was going to be in a Jim Cameron movie.
He was in a Jim Cameron movie. He was in True Lies.
Yes, no, that's what I mean. But, like, was that before or after this?
That was before The Stupids.
Yeah. James? Jim Cameron. Like, James Cameron, yes. James.
James Cameron, the greatest pioneer. No budget too steep, no sea too deep. What's that? Ooh, see James Cameron. Sorry, every time I hear his name these days, that's what I think of.
What is that?
Oh, Nora, sweet summer child. There was an episode of South Park right after he went down to the Mariana Trench. And that actually happened, but on the show, he's going down there to quote unquote raise the bar on culture. I forget exactly what prompted that, but he commissioned his own theme song while he was in the submarine, and that was it.
Wow.
He was like those idiots who exploded, but like smarter and with the best IMDb picture of all
time. He actually had a submarine that worked.
Back up. What?
R.I.P.
Okay. So around here, he ends up at the dump after taking a nap in the trunk of the garbage truck and then waking up like, oh no, I've lost them. And then he realizes that he took a nap in the trunk of the garbage. Anyway. And enter staple of acting staple of the Max Landis or John Landis. Jesus Christ.
Why do you keep wanting to talk about his son?
Because I hate his son.
Son's in this movie.
I know he is. I will get there. But he ends up at Niedermeyer from Animal House. And guess what? He's called Niedermeyer from Animal House. And I'm also frustrated because I'm pretty sure that at the end of Animal House, it said that Niedermeyer died in Vietnam because his own men shot him.
Yes.
And you directed the fucking movie. You should remember that because you directed the movie and you should remember that. And it just reminds me, I don't like to watch or read or listen to my own stuff. And of course I do for you, the audience. But do you think he doesn't watch his own movies? Do you think, like, when the premiere comes out, he just introduces it and then goes off to the bathroom to do rails and then come back at the end? Like, because the idea that he forgot the end of his own movie, which is kind of an iconic ending, is remarkable to me.
I think he just wanted that militant voice, which, for people who don't know, Animal House... it was the movie that I first watched the third movie I watched in college as a guy in the fraternity. Hearing his voice in The Stupids brought me back, it brought me back to those days where he's getting hit over the head with over a horse and getting shit thrown in his face, and then him getting food thrown in his face. He gets a lot of facials at Animal House, so to speak, with things. But no, he's hilarious in this movie, and I think that's actually one of the highlights, is this general or militant person.
I mean, you're not wrong, because he's a good actor and he's funny. But effectively... Go ahead.
Well, I mean, after this, that actor, Mark Metcalf, was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer as the main villain in the first season. So it's like, that was way more fun. I mean, yeah. Here he's just wasted. It's like the stupidest Easter egg imaginable, because Nick's right. Yeah. Niedermeyer was killed in Vietnam, and there was actually another John Landis movie that referenced that. And that was the Twilight Zone movie. If you remember during the Vietnam sequence there, Nick, one of the soldiers, like, I knew we shouldn't have fragged Niedermeyer.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. That's funny.
So the character was already confirmed dead.
He is.
And honestly, that's not even the dumbest part about the beginning, because everything just sort of builds up. The kids realize, they wake up, they realize dad's gone. They try and figure out what's going on. And, they're trying to write a note to their mother about where they're going, which is to a police station, because they think dad's been kidnapped, signed your children, and all Bug Hill writes down as police kidnapped your children. And why are you laughing at that, Nora? That is such a dumb joke, especially in the context here.
Hey, I'm... this is stupid.
Well, this movie is kind of stupid, so I mean...
It's also called The Stupids. So don't you feel dumb?
Stupidception.
Okay, so what Stanley Stupid comes across is people throwing out their garbage, and it's not the fun kind of garbage, like we also literally saw last week with Armed and Dangerous. I guess Daniel has picked literally a theme month of Garbage Month, which is pretty good. But he realizes that there's a meeting of people. We have two people in military uniform, because the U.S. military, I guess at this point, I mean, this is the Clinton era, they're selling off government surplus because the military has been cut. They cut military funding. So now they're selling off shit.
That's what happened?
Yeah. So the Clinton administration, because the Cold War was over, they actually cut military spending significantly. And so there's surplus, which is one of those things that after the armed robberies in in LA, and the guy who built his own tank, they're like, well, I know what we can do with the surplus. We can sell it to the local police departments. But here, what they're doing is selling it to various organized criminal organizations, because Niedermeyer is afraid of being cut or something. He didn't get his promotion.
Yeah, I think he was pissy about a promotion.
Yeah, which did happen at the time. You know, we were shrinking our military because the Cold War was over, which is why Republicans hated Clinton. You have various organized criminal organizations like the Italian Mafia, Colombians, the Russians were buying up U.S. surplus. And to do this, we had a demonstration, and Stanley Stupid shows up, and they're now convinced he is like Carlos the Jackal or something. Like, it's amazing. They're convinced that the FBI or the CIA is after them in the guise of Stanley Stupid, who they then proceed to try to kill multiple times.
Well, I'll be fair, though, to the movie. There are two legitimately funny moments in this that I identified. And one of those moments is at the dump scene where Stanley's trying to go incognito. And so he disguises himself as a bush. But in order to disguise yourself as a bush, you have to think like a bush. And so he does so and really commits to it. And it ends with him declaring, "Man Bush, you are nature's greatest wonder," which is one of the greatest lines, even in such a bad movie. That is one of the greatest quotes in film history.
Well, I mean, and I agree with you. And this is why I say this movie is, how do I put it, despite itself, Tom Arnold is very funny.
Right.
Like, I just, God help me, he would be a great, like, Max Bialystock or something. Like, He's just
there you go.
He's just so big and over the top and like charming. Just the problem was that's not how comedy was done at the time. And so he just didn't fit. And it's a shame because I found him delightful.
Well, what was this movie rated? PG? PG-13?
PG.
I think PG.
Well, I mean, you can hardly imagine this being PG-13. There's really nothing inappropriate in it.
Well, because illegally selling guns was totally fine in 1990s.
I mean, Home Alone. Well,
maybe when they start shooting them, but even then it's played for slapstick rather than someone actually being killed.
Yeah, I don't think anyone dies. You know, people explode, but they're fine, you know?
I mean, there was Home Alone and Tom and Jerry still on our television, so how violent is violent?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean,
the rule always has to do with how much you see someone hurt and if they look or like a human or not. It's like, you can kill all the aliens or monsters you want and it will never get an R rating, but the second you see someone bleeding out that's a human, you get an R.
No, yep. That's true. Not to go off topic, something interesting I learned recently at the time. So this movie, 1994? So it was in PG rating, so it was geared towards family-oriented. And they still hold that to be true. If you look at the animated shows that Fox was putting out for children at the time, the Batman Beyonds, the Static Shocks, they got away, and since they're futuristic aspects, you know, instead of showing blood, they would show goo or electricity. Same thing with the Power Rangers. When they got hit, they sparked. Just small tidbit.
Well, it's like China now, where they turn blood white, so it looks like semen all the time.
Really confusing with Master Roshi, whenever he'd get a boner, he would bleed. So every time, so now I see it, is that so every time he gets a boner,
it's jizzes. A learning experience.
Yeah.
Smegmata.
Well, yeah. And I can, yeah. Could you see Tom Arnold as the family man, though? Could you see, I mean, compared to the 90s, not as Cosby now, probably, but like.
I mean, probably. I see him more like a family man than that wife who's terrible.
Let's talk about the wife.
Okay, so while Tom Arnold is at the dump, she returns to see the fact that her children are missing with the stupidest letter that stupids have ever stupided, which is essentially
police kidnapped your children.
That's right, because what it's supposed to say is, Mom, we've gone to the police because Dad is missing. He was kidnapped, signed your children. It was something like that. And instead, the son wrote down every third word or whatever. So it sounds like that the police have kidnapped us. And so the mom, now in her station wagon, is going down to the police station. Period. And so then they destroy a police station. They destroy the local newspaper. Literally
the kids walk out of a Chinese restaurant without paying the bill.
Oh my god. Then visiting the Imperial Walk or whatever the hell that place is called.
The Emerald Palace or something.
Oh yeah.
Okay, Chinese restaurants just in general. There's like five words that you just mix together differently each time. It's the same. There's Great Wall. There's Dragon. There's Jade. There's Imperial. And then you just like, shuffle it. Great. The one near us is called Great Wall, and it's very good. Candace's growing up was Imperial Walk, and it's very, very good. But it's so funny how it's just like the Jade something. And it's the Simpsons joke that I believe at this point the Simpsons ripped off the Stupids, where he goes, oh, there's some sort of communique in this cookie.
Yeah.
And Buster finds out that, you know, it's the Ides of March and they're about to stab Caesar or whatever the hell it says.
Actually, I don't even remember. I just know they walked out without paying any sort of bill. And it's like, how did that happen?
It was the 90s. Y'all used to pay with checks. How was that efficient?
Yeah, and then you had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and pizza pies that would jump into the sewer. It's just a thing. It was a goings-on. Anyway, so from here, like, Jesus Christ, this movie is so long. Stanley Stupid, we get revealed the fact that in what is the dumbest, by far the worst, he used to work as a postman.
Oh, boy. This actually led to one of the second funny moments, but it's also the most frustrating moment of the movie because it's like, why do that? But Nick, please continue here.
Okay. So the whole point of this was he's walking down the street and he's giving out mail randomly, right? This is that kind of post-Reagan, like, the government is terrible, we need to cut them kind of stuff. Because he's just like, whenever he sees a number, he assumes that's the number of the address, and so he just...
There's a gag with, like, a wood chipper from Fargo being in the middle of the road, and it's got the number 11 on it. So it's like, oh, I've got a house number 11 on this street. So he's sticking the mail in the wood chipper.
That's not even the worst one. The worst one is the most racist one.
Go ahead, Trinette. Go.
I'm not okay. Maybe okay. I'll say this. The very first mail he gives away, and I didn't do my homework. I didn't do my homework, but I didn't make the joke. Okay. I didn't make the joke. There was a foreign language of, I want to say it was Japanese. I'll say that. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I didn't know. There was a group of Japanese schoolgirls, and they're just, you know, just walking back from school, and he's wearing his, you know, his mail, his U.S. Postal Service. And then literally he was like, oh, stop, wait a second. He goes into his bag, and he hands these girls a letter. And then the letter, they're like, what the fuck? And it happened to be in Japanese. And then he walks about.
Okay.
That's the tone of the entire montage of him fucking up his federal job.
Well, the way he really fucks up his job is when he gets back to headquarters and he sees a bunch of letters marked return to sender, so he decides that Mr. Sender is some guy at the center of Skull and Bones who secretly rules the world and keeps the metric system down and makes Steve Guttenberg a star, one of those figures. And then his boss, and this is the second funny moment in the movie, played by David Cronenberg, of all people.
And then Sender is played by
Christopher Lee.
Who's Christopher Lee?
Christopher Lee.
Oh my God,
Nor. Not Christopher Lee, Nor.
Christopher Lee is in 200 bad British horror movies, Hammer movies specifically, but he is in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
He's Saruman.
He's Saruman.
That's.
And he's also less loved as Count Dooku.
Yes, in the prequel trilogy, he's Count Dooku.
Oh shit, that is Count Dooku. Oh my bad, I just saw.
If you're a Bond fan, he was also the main villain in Man with a Golden Gun.
Scaramanga. Mr. Scaramanga. Yes. Which is not a great movie, but one of my favorite Bond movies. I've seen it 1,000 times. I love that movie.
Well, we know why you love it, Nicholas. It's because of Mr. J.W. Pepper.
Dude, first of all, J.W. Pepper is such a, like, Jimmy Bond. Yeah, like, and also the fact that he has, at the end of it, it ends like a Fellini film in a house of mirrors. Like, it's so strange. All of a sudden it becomes like Italian neorealism or something, where there's just like, you do realize, Mr. Bond, everything is just this circus. And then it turns, it's absurd. But he played like Dracula and stuff 1,000 times. If you like, just look him up in his Hammer movies, and you've got a pretty good afternoon. It's schlocky old horror, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Well, yes, Christopher Lee does show up in Stanley's fantasy sequence as Mr. Sender.
It was a waste of a role.
Yeah, it sure was, considering that's not what's going on. And did we mention that Niedermeyer is now trying to kill Stanley because he thinks that Stanley's a foreign intelligence agent who is trying to turn them in to the authorities for selling American munitions?
I mean, we have not, but, like, you have, again, Carlos the Jackal type, like, oh, don't worry, I'll kill your stupid. And he's just blowing shit up.
Stanley survives. Wait, did we skip something? I think we skipped something.
We, like this movie, are kind of all over the place. So Niedermeyer is trying to kill Stanley and sends out three assassins. And one of them is thwarted because of what happens earlier when the kids reunite with mom and they end up in the they end up in an office building where a newspaper is getting published, and
right. It
actually is somehow important. They change a headline to talk about aliens picking their nose.
Oh right. My god. The aliens. Oh god.
Which happens in this movie, but that's much later, and
oh, but we see them here, like a scene out of Airplane.
Yeah, because
they have the fucking local newspaper.
I was thinking more Monty Python's Life of Brian.
You know what?
Yes,
it's a stupid part of Life of Brian, but at least it's made by talented people. This feels, and they spent so much money on these costumes. They look good. It's just stupid.
It was something
very stupid.
Very stupid. I felt like that sketch or that scene, like I felt like Ben Stiller wrote that. You know what I mean? It was that Adult Swim-esque type of, like, you know what I mean? Like
infomercial. It was a Robot Chicken bit. That's exactly what it was.
You know right. What? If Tim and Eric had used this material, it probably would have turned out the same, but there would have been this wise tongue-in-cheek about it, which would have been weird.
Actually, that's a good call. Been
something.
That's a good call. If it had been the same script, but it was either Aqua Teen Hunger Force or Tim and Eric, it would have worked. Because yeah. You expect it a certain way, they would have delivered it a certain way. Even keep Tim Arnold, or Tom Arnold, almost said Tim Allen. But like, okay. I mean, I don't even know how much we want to say after this. Like, there's a bunch of stupid shit. There's a chase, they get back together. We have Stanley Stupid's like conspiracy theory breakdown about how it's all this one guy. And then we end up at a warehouse. Like...
We're skipping over a few things here. There's this whole thing in a planetarium where, as I think Matt alluded to earlier, Stanley and his daughter, Petunia, right? Is that her name?
Yes.
Well, I mean, kids, I'm sorry again. I don't like to pick on child actors. I hope they're both doing well, blah, 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 my usual disclaimer, but they aren't that good here.
She's terrible in particular. Although I don't know what they told her to do, but she is not good.
Although the janitor that they meet that they think is God is Frankie Faison from Silence of the Lambs.
He's good.
He's very, very convincing God.
Yes, okay. He is. And then
Petunia Stupid looks like she's in a bunch of TV actors. Sorry, TV shows, and ended up playing a character in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, good for her.
She had a career. Good on her. And so they call him the Lord, and he says, no, my name is Lloyd.
Lloyd.
And that's Lloyd. Doing something for someone. You know, it's fine.
I will say this. The actor who plays him, oh my God, Frankie Faison, I swear, he is in a lot of black cultured film.
Oh. Is he the dad of Donald Faison?
No, not of Donald Faison. That's actually interesting enough. I wouldn't have put the two together. Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. He was in Coming to America.
Like said, he was in Silence of the Lambs as the orderly that worked at... the hospital Lecter was kept at.
Yeah. And you can picture him if you don't, you know those movies. Our audience know those movies. But he just has this kind of very, like, he has the beard, he has a round face, and he's got this smile that you're just like.
He's played the angry black captain, like notable movies like in White Chicks. The one that yells. He's just one of those.
But he does have that pleasantness to his face in a lot of the movies. Like, he's good because he comes in and these people are acting like blithering idiots. And he's just like, don't you worry. Yeah.
If you watch Coming to America, he's the landlord.
The whole thing about this movie is every supporting character is doing the same thing they do in Beavis and Butthead, which, again, the movie's got the same plot as this one, essentially. Which is that the main characters are absolute idiots, but everyone else who's sane around them is trying their best to understand what's going on. So they think the main characters are a lot smarter than they really are.
Well, I mean, I guess we can get to case in point when they end up in the TV studios. Yes. And the daughter and the girl, or the daughter and the mother, end up at an interview show. It's like a talk show, and they're interviewing Jenny McCarthy. And as she's talking about how vaccinations are fake, they just keep slipping on the laugh button. And so she's getting really off put at the fact that people are laughing at her, which they should, because she's terrible.
Mom and daughter, I think, are messing around in the studio and trying to find the light switch for some reason, but they find the switch that turns on the sign that indicates everybody should clap. And so Jenny McCarthy's like saying, "It's the worst moment of my life. I don't know how to recover." And then everyone's just, "Yay!" Which, in a different context, might be an inspired gag, but here it just has it doesn't make any sense to the plot. It could be cut and nothing would be lost, and none of the characters, quite frankly, have earned it. Well, I mean, they haven't earned the laugh.
Well, but and on top of that, which you're right, it's not silly enough, right? Like, if they wanted it to do the thing that it's doing, they need to go full Zucker Abram Zucker and make it absurd. Right? You need a Frank Drebin type. And like, you know, by this point, of course, they were just about leaving Funny Movies and starting to make their right-wing propaganda that they're making now. But like, the idea that Frank Drebin ended up in a TV studio and was flipping the wrong signs, that works. And then he ends up on a talk show and has to make up a story. That work, like, I mean, again, Sudsy, you know, I'm like pitching this to you, but that's a bit that they would have done, right? And so this is also something that I know my good friend here, Matt, loved, which is the I'm my own grandpa thing, when they were trying to come up with horrible families, and it's just now, you know, pulls on
well,
Pornhub.
See, if you want to do a Jerry Springer parody, Austin Powers did that much better a couple years after this. I mean, Jerry Springer, RIP, he died earlier this year.
He did. The mayor of Cincinnati.
Yes, he was. And he ran for governor of Ohio, but got caught trying to buy prostitutes right across the border in Kentucky. But anyway, Jerry Springer was the sleaziest thing you can imagine. And yes, the topic here would have been appropriate, but none of the guests really do anything funny with it.
And then that's the problem.
I've got three ex-husbands and they're all my cousin. And it's like, okay. They never build on that.
Yeah, like the joke is dead on arrival. And the problem is, if it's a joke that someone would have just pitched, hell, and again, I love you guys, but like if it's a joke you would have pitched here, you can do better for a major motion picture. And the idea that someone's dated three cousins is stupid, not funny, and it's something you throw away for people you know. They laugh and then you move on. It's not something you say, you know what, this needs to be in a script. Like, and again, when Stanley Stupid sings the bit from wherever it came from. You said the 40s. I'm my own like grandpa. That. It works. It's funny.
I seem to remember Jeff Foxworthy including it on one of his albums or his shows.
You don't say. Local Boy done good. Actually, I don't know if he's from Georgia. I know he lives in Country Club of the South around here.
I think he's from Alabama initially, maybe?
I mean, I believe you. Yeah. I've seen him locally. There used to be a comedy club up in Roswell where who's the guy who drank on stage?
Ron White.
Ron White. They had places in a neighborhood just north of Atlanta called Country Club of the South, where like a lot of the Braves live, you know, that kind of thing. It's a very nice, ritzy neighborhood. And there was a comedy club just outside there. And if you wanted to see people like that, you would just go on the Thursday night, because it was kind of not an open mic night. They had regulars, but that's when Jeff Foxworthy or Ron White would just drop in and do a set. And Ron would bring his own whiskey because he didn't like what they had at the bar. And they would do an hour, you know, and you'd just be listening to them. So I've seen them both, which means nothing here. But it's just, it's a song. It's funny. It just doesn't add anything because they didn't write it for this. It's just Tom Arnold made good.
Especially considering the song doesn't match with what we've seen in the movie. I mean, he's singing about marrying a widow, and it's like, we've seen your wife, dude. That ain't what's going on. So it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's the only time in the movie he does a bit, which is strange. You know what would have been funnier? Honestly, if he did the thing from Ant-Man where he actually tries to explain what's happening in the movie at this point, but yeah. And then it sounds so stupid that no one in the audience believes him. And then it becomes a bit again.
And then they applaud.
Right.
Because they'll start singing along and stuff.
Well, he's prompting them to.
Well,
John Landis can do musical scenes. He did the Blues Brothers. He directed Thriller. He knows how to put music in a film. What is he doing here?
You know what they should have done? I do get the, if they went from a daytime talk show ripoff like Oprah, they should have gotten Oprah. If not, man, I wish he would have just popped into the Arsenio Hall show. Oh. And then like, you know what I mean? And then they do the hoo-hoo, whatever, you know. And then he did that song with the cousin fucking. That would have been more hilarious to me.
I think Arsenio Hall was gone at this point.
He could have brought it back.
It's still a bit. It's a comedy bit then. And then there would have been more than one black person in the whole movie.
Lloyd.
Bob Keeshan is in this movie, but there are, like Nick said, barely any black people.
Yeah. So
God was black in this movie. So I'll take that.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, fair. Fair. And he tells him not to put gum on the floor, which is apparently crucial to the plot. You're going to have to help me. After this, I know we end up at a factory, but this turns to sand.
Niedermeyer thinks that Stanley had been killed earlier in a car explosion. An assassin put a bomb on there. Stanley got out because a bee got in the car. So, you know, more stupid stuff, but he sees Stanley singing I'm My Own Grandpa on TV, and then like they go to the station to kidnap him as Stanley finds the real Mr. Sender, and that's Bob Keeshan, Mr. Captain Kangaroo himself. Mr. Captain Kangaroo, listen to me.
Captain and
Mr. There you go. And they take Stanley. No, sheesh, even I'm forgetting the sequence here. They all end up at the warehouse where Niedermeyer is working to sell his arms. And then the family, he doesn't bring them there, but they end up back here because Stanley somehow escapes more people trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is all a shootout here. Like, it's insane. And everyone, of course, is fine except for the military, who's incompetent. this is a time period where the joke is always that the military is incompetent, right? Like,
do you
this
remember?
Is...
Do you remember a movie called True Lies?
I do.
By Jim Cameron,
where a part of it took place in a warehouse, and it's all about people who don't know what they're doing escaping certain death. Because that's the same joke here.
If Jamie Lee Curtis showed up and did a striptease, I'd have been happier. So,
oh, there you go.
Indeed.
But like, literally, in a scene that I think they stole for Black Dynamite, like, the whole factory is burning down. Like, it's incredible what happens here. Yeah. And we do see Niedermeyer just, like, you know, panicking. He puts on a U.S. Marshal's jacket and then lets his little lieutenant there take the fall, which is great.
You know, Nick, I was expecting you to do a Niedermeyer impression, because that just seems that seems to be in your repertoire, you know.
A pledge pin on your jacket. You're all worthless and weak. Drop and give me 50.
No,
and without that pledge pin.
God, Animal House is great.
I haven't seen that in too long. That's one I need to watch.
Listen,
I don't know if there's a better introduction to a character than Blutowski pissing on his feet. You want a beer?
I don't think there's a better ending in any comedy than that montage at the end where it's explaining what happened to everyone and John Belushi became a senator.
Yeah, Mrs. and Senator Blutowski.
Senator Robert Blutowski.
Listen, that movie Animal House is the reason why I do shout a karaoke, you know what I mean? And it's and weddings and stuff too. That movie was the Tropic Thunder of its time.
Sure.
That's what you're all right.
I mean, audience, if you have not seen Animal House, Caddyshack, or Ghostbusters, stop the podcast and just watch it. Because, like, the late 70s and early 80s of comedy, that's when the biggest draws were Star Wars and comedy. Like, it's just such a strange time in American movies. And then, like, the mid to late 80s is when action takes over. Yeah. But, like, holy hell, like, you know, it's just some classic comedy. It's just so
good. They don't make comedies like they obviously for obvious reasons, like whatchamacallit, Grease, a movie that is rated G. If it came out today, it was not fucking rated G. I saw my first pair of panties in a G-rated movie.
Well, plus the abortion subplot.
What? I forgot about that.
Remember with what's her name? Rizzo? I think she's pregnant.
The pink banded ladies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want an abortion subplot, isn't it Footloose too?
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing.
It
is very
a big plot of the part of the plot.
Yeah.
You don't make comedies like that anymore, or have the same, I guess, ratings or conflict. Like, who was it? The guy from Workaholics, Adam Devine.
Devine.
He recently was on an interview because, like, he's making these Netflix comedies under Happy Production, which is Adam Sandler's production team, you know, because no big studio is going to be bankrolling them. This pains me to say this, but like, no studio is putting money into comedy like this anymore, because the fucking Marvel and the Avengers, you know, you have to be, think about it. The Stupids was a comedy movie that had action. You don't get that anymore unless you're on Hulu or Netflix or whatever. You know what I mean? You're getting that with Avenger movies. Like, they're action movies that have comedy in them.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we will continue to talk about this until it's fixed, which will be never. But, like, problem is, movies have to go in for a dollar and for a pound, right? Like, you've got to put in $1 million for every $2 million you expect to make. And you can't do that with a small movie anymore. So they'll put in $150 million for a comedy. And if it makes less than 300, it's not a success, you know? And so, like, these medium, like, the last one that I saw that was medium to low budget that I thought was very funny and actually got a theatrical release was Game Night, which is pretty, which is funny. I enjoyed it, but it's just like that used to be the thing that there were six of a year, maybe 12 of a year, that people enjoyed. They all made a little bit of money, but like that's something that because now you can just dump that shit on Netflix, like you'll get worse actors to save money, and then it's not really that funny. You know, and it, because you have people who can't deliver a joke, just like the same way that like rom-coms used to dominate the early 90s, that's gone because they're all on Netflix. So you can't get real, like Tom Hanks would never be in a rom-com anymore, or even the next generation of Tom Hanks, because it needs to make $400 million in profit to be a Tom Hanks movie. So we'll leave it on Netflix. No one will watch it, and then it'll just be forgotten. And so a bunch of people who were working on General Hospital this week, you know, they'll never move up because it's never a big blockbuster, but also it'll just sit, it'll languish. That's a shame. This is a movie that we've been talking about, which should have been animated like Captain Underpants, and then it might have made an impact. But instead, we're here.
Well, it feels like we're wrapping up, and I just want to, I'll just go ahead and run through the ending real quick. Niedermeyer tries to escape. Makes a subordinate take the fall, but then he ends up at the end getting incapacitated by someone delivering deli, delivering dinner to the stupid's house. And then they host a little barbecue in the backyard. The aliens that were all pissed off about Stanley's story, about Stanley's story show up, and they are also incapacitated. And we haven't mentioned this yet, but I do want to mention it before we wrap up. They're fucking pets. Those horrifying-looking CGI monsters that I think are trying to be like Wallace and Gromit, but honestly, that's going to haunt my nightmares anything more than anything Stephen King could have ever cooked up.
Well, we've been talking about this movie for...
Even that doll from... Sixth Day, was it worse than that?
Anything.
We didn't mention the claymated animals
for an hour. I don't know what they were. I don't know if it was like stop motion, I think it was CGI trying to pretend to be stop motion, but that just comes out of nowhere. I mean, they're trying to ground this in some form of reality, and then all of a sudden there's a horrifying cat hybrid thing.
A dog?
I mean,
there's a cat and a dog.
Right.
I mean, I think you're right. I think these are based on the actual animation that's in the illustrated comics or like the books. Yes. And they look terrible. Like they truly look ungodly. This is where I wish they had decided to either make it all animated or not animated. Like, it's so incredibly jarring. And like you mentioned here at the end, the dog is trying to gesture to the fact that they're aliens. No one notices because no one can see these CGI monstrosities.
What, they get hit with lighter fluid and then lit on fire?
Exactly. He commits an international war, like an intergalactic war crime. I imagine the sequel is them in the apocalypse. Right.
Well, this did come out the same year as Independence Day. That's my response to that. So we've been talking for more than an hour at this point. Let's go ahead and wrap it up with final thoughts. Let's start with you, Nora, and then Matt, and then Nick, and then I'll close us out.
All right. So apologies for it being long. But I think if anything, I really did enjoy the conversation of this movie with you guys. But in that, it made me appreciate good comedies. And the era that I grew up watching comedies, my first ever DVD, Blu-ray, was Blues Brothers. I appreciated both the musical aspect and the comedic aspect. It got me into SNL. I'm a huge SNL guy. This movie also makes me appreciate the good comedies and like the frat pack of the 2000s, you know, the Anchorman's, the Step Brothers, you know, the Adam McKay's, you know. And then there's this movie. I'll be honest with you guys. I watched this while in quarantine, and while in quarantine, I'm just chilling. Maybe I had a gummy. Okay, and maybe I enjoyed this movie under the influence. And when that alien scene popped up, I was fucking laughing my ass off because what the fuck? This is how stupid this movie is. But there were traits of this movie that I enjoyed because of the wonderful director. You know, the like it. The only thing that seemed half-assed in this movie was just the execution. It had everything set up. It had this. It was the scenes. It was the actors. Everything, but it missed what it was trying to do. I felt like it was just more of like, hey, hurry the fuck up. We have this property. We need to just do something. You know, it's like this. You know that one for like studios and directors, like one for me, one for them. This was probably like one for them almost, just to get the property, but. That's how I felt. You need to be high to watch this movie. That's my final thought.
Matt, were you high to watch this movie?
No, I wasn't.
Maybe. Are you high right now? No.
No, I'm just tired. This movie is stupid and not in a fun way. There's movies that are so stupid they're entertaining. This is just dumb and boring, and the fact that there are a couple funny jokes doesn't make up for it. Don't bother.
I'm going to steal a page from Matt Quinn and just say two words, no, and then don't watch it, which is like six words, but just say no. This is awful. Daniel.
Well, I picked this movie because, again, that was one of those things I'd heard of, and had I been a little younger or had my parents not been so discerning, I may have ended up watching this as a kid. I didn't, fortunately, because this is not good. I mean, God love Tom Arnold. He tried his best with the material, but the problem is it was such bad material. And the tragic thing is, if this had been like some sitcom director, like somebody who had directed a bunch of Friends and Roseanne episodes making a film debut, yeah, okay, that would have made more sense. But this is a guy who directed some of the most important movies of the 70s and 80s. I mean, he knows what he's doing, and I don't get what his excuse was here. I mean, everything about this is just amateurish, and the callbacks to John Landis's other movies indicate that, again, he knows what he's doing, and that just makes it all the worse. Oh, this might be one of the worst things movies we've ever done for this podcast.
Well, thanks for
Wow.
everyone involved. I agree. This almost wouldn't have been a better idea for an animated show or something. It's just so bad. It's unwatchable. But as we leave our Dantastic month, we are now going into October. I know everything's slightly out of sync, if you have forgotten. Since Pee Wee Herman passed, we pushed everything back a little bit. But for October and the first week of November, we're going to be in Stephen King country. Starting with a movie I had not seen before this, but kind of a classic of his books, Christine. So thanks for everything you do. Thanks for listening. Thanks for following us. Thanks for sharing us. And please continue to do everything as we talk King Month and we leave this fantastic. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Ner Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Ner Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.